Wednesday. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Reading with Rick. We're halfway through the week. We're halfway through the month, for that matter. And we're more than halfway through Bridge to Terabithia, but we'll talk about that a little bit later tonight. Hi, boys and girls. How are you tonight? I'm doing really good. Tonight, we're going to go back to the Berenstain Bears. Last night, they were in a picnic. The night before that, Papa Bear showed little boy Bear how to ride a bike. And tonight, they all go on a vacation to the ocean. So that's going to be the first story tonight from the big book of Berenstain Bears, The Bear's Vacation. And then our second book tonight, we are going to finish off the final two chapters of Bridge to Terabithia. What a sad ending it was last night when we stopped reading, when we found out that Leslie died in an accident by the creek. And of course, that's when Jess was off to Washington, D.C. And he got the news when he got home. And that was a sad way to end last night, wasn't it? I hope tonight is a little happier. We'll see. It's the end of the book. Just two more short chapters. So that'll end that book then. And then we'll start the search for a new book that will start tomorrow night. So for now, let's get started with the Berenstain Bears and Vacation. And the first picture shows Papa Bear and Little Boy Bear and Mama Bear in a red car, and they're traveling down the road, and they're going somewhere. And they got an umbrella tucked away in the back seat, and look like Mama Bear's got a suitcase, and Papa Bear's got his ball cap on, and they're going down the road. And it says, "Hooray, hooray, we're on our way. Our summer vacation starts today." "And here we are. What a wonderful trip. Let's get in the water. Let's go for a dip." And they ended up by the ocean, it looks like. And there, right on the beach by the water, is a small little cottage. It's got two windows in front and one on each side and a window in the back. And up on top on the second floor, a little circle window. And it's painted pink and gray. And the bears get to the little cottage, and they stop, and Papa Bear looks like he brought his swimsuit along, and so did Little Boy Bear, and Papa Bear's swimsuit is going to cover him from his feet to his shoulders, and it's blue and red stripes, and Little Boy Bear's swimsuit is bright pink. They get out of the car, and they go into their little vacation cottage. And Mama Bear, before she knows it, Boy Bear's in his swimsuit and headed for the water. And she says, small bear, don't you go too far. I want to see you wherever you are." Yeah, Mom doesn't want Little Boy Bear to stray too far away. And Papa Bear is right behind him, and he put on his bright yellow with red stripes swimsuit, and he's got his towel. And he says, "Don't you worry, don't you fear. I'll show him all the dangers here." And Little Boy Bear is up to his ankles in the water, and it looks like there's some kind of sign there right in the water, but you can't really see what it says. "I'm watching, Dad. I'm all set to go." And Papa Bear says, "Then here is the first rule that you should know. Obey all warning signs. Look around. Are there any warning signs to be found?" Well, there is a warning sign, but while Papa Bear was saying that to the Little Boy Bear, he threw his towel right over the sign, and he hit it. But it looks like the wind blew strong enough that the towel moved off the sign, and the sign says, "Warning, strong undertow." And Little Boy Bear can read it. He says, "There is one, and I think you should know. It says in big letters, strong undertow." And Papa Bear, he's on his back trying to swim, but the undertow is pulling him out to the deep part of the ocean. And he says, "Ah, yes, small bear, you're right, it does. Do you see how good my first rule was?" "Yes, Papa, here, catch hold of this line." And he throws a rope out to Papa Bear, and Papa Bear just is able to grab a hold of it. "I'll be safe when I swim now. That lesson was fine." And he pulls Papa Bear in with a lifesaver around his chest, and Papa Bear's pretty worried, it looks like. "You will be safe when diving, too, after I give you rule number 2. Look first, then dive when all is clear. Now let's take a look. Is there anything near?" As they walk down the beach, they come to this tall, a little structure, and it's got a ladder leading to the top, and there's a diving board on the end, and it looks like the whole thing is made out of tree branches. Papa Bear is the first one up the ladder, and he gets to the end of the diving board. And Little Boy Bear is down below, and he's looking down into the water, and he sees something, and he tries to warn Papa Bear. He goes, "Yes, Dad, there is. I see a twig." But Papa Bear waves him off and says, "Never mind that. It's not very big." And he jumps off head first into the water, but guess what? Above the water that the little boy bear saw was the little part of the twig, and underneath the water where you can't see was that twig was attached to a big old log. And Papa Bear went down on it head first. And Baby Boy Bear says, "You proved it, Dad. Even a twig can be bad." "Right, my son. That is very true. It's a pleasure to teach these rules to you." And they walk further down the beach, and Papa Bear's kind of holding his head because he's got a headache, and Little Boy Bear looks pretty excited. He says, "Dad, I'll remember the rules you gave. Now let's go surfing. Let's ride on a wave." And they come upon a little shack, and there are surfboards. And there's a sign that says, "Surfboards for rent." And there's a man, another bear sitting on a chair, smoking a pipe, just looking out at the ocean. He must be the guy that rents the surfboards. Papa Bear says, "Now we go on to rule number 3. Beware of all rocks when surfing at sea." "Look, Papa, rocks right there ahead. We should be aware of them, as you said." And Papa Bear says, "Those rocks are much too far away. The surf will not reach those rocks today." And Papa Bear is pointing. Actually, those rocks are on the beach, and they're out in the water. But he's looking at the beach while Little Boy Bear is looking behind. And Papa Bear doesn't see it, but Little Boy Bear does. And coming up behind him is a giant wave that's about to crash into them. And it does. "Then, on the other hand, we might end up on those rocks. You see, I was right." "I think I understand safety now. Thank you, Dad, for showing me how. But I have much more to tell you, my son. My safety rules have only begun." And that big wave, it put him way up on top of the rocks. And the guy that's renting the surfboard, he leans out of his little shack, and he's looking up there like, "What the heck just happened?" And Papa Bear and Little Boy Bear, they go down the beach some more, and they find a little dock. And they walk out into the dock, and out at the end of the dock, there's a whole bunch of exposed rocks, and there's some starfishes, and some seashells, and clams, all kinds of little sea creatures there. And Papa Bear explains, "When people vacation at the shore, they like to take walks. They like to explore. So watch your step is rule number 4. There are many sharp shells along the shore." And while Little Boy Bear stays at the top of the steps, Papa Bear is off the steps, and he is looking and walking around the slippery rocks, not really looking where he's stepping. Little Boy Bear spies a shell among the rocks and says, "Here's a sharp one. I'll step with care. But may I keep it? It looks quite rare." And Papa Bear looks back, and he says, "Wait now, don't touch anything yet. There's another rule you have to get." Papa Bear, while he's talking to the Little Boy Bear, he picked up a shell in one hand and what he thought was a rock in the other hand. But it's really a giant turtle with a green shell that looks like a rock, and that turtle doesn't look too happy that Papa Bear picked him up. And Papa Bear says, "Here it is, rule number 5. Watch what you touch. It may be alive." And Papa Bear quickly lets go of that turtle, and he scrambles back up the steps as this little boy bear helps him, pulling him by the arm. Rules 4 and 5 are good to know. Now I'll be safe wherever I go. That's little boy bear explaining to Papa Bear that he's ready. But Papa Bear says, "Not quite, my son. Hop into this boat. You must learn the rule for safety afloat." And there's a little sailboat tied up to a log there by the beach. And its sail is all tucked around a long pole right in the middle. And there's another couple of sailboats and some fishing nets there, too. And the little sailboat, it's a red boat. The sail is white, and there's a red flag on top of it. So they get in the boat, and they take off, and they unfurl the flag, and the wind is just right, and it starts to take the sailboat out into the water. Out in a boat, you must take care. And here's rule number 6, small bear. Keep a sharp lookout. It's easy to do. Watch me now. I'll do it for you. See, like this. Only a fool would sail on the sea without this rule. And Papa Bear is out in the back of the boat, and he's holding the rudder. That's kind of the steering wheel of a ship. And he's taking them around the ocean, but he doesn't see the big ship that's coming the other way. Little Boy Bear does, though. It's coming right at him, and it's a big ship with giant smokestacks, and it's cutting through the water headed right for the little sailboat. "It's a very good rule. I can see that, Dad. Without it, things might get very bad." And just at the last moment, that little sailboat just got out of the way. Otherwise, it would have been hit by that giant ship. Little Boy Bear says, "I've been happy to learn all you had to teach. Are we ready now to go back to the beach?" Papa Bear says, "Not yet." He looks like he has grabbed some snorkeling gear. He's got some fins and a face mask on, and it looks like a spear in his hand and an anchor in his other hand. Papa Bear says, "I have one rule more before we go, and then you'll know all you need to know." And they put on the gear, and they jump into the water, fins on their feet and masks on their eyes, and they are swimming down to the bottom of the ocean. And Papa Bear looks back at Little Boy Bear behind him. They're tied together by a rope. They have one rope around Papa Bear's waist and the other one around Little Boy Bear's waist so they don't get separated. He says, "One more thing people do at the shore. They go underwater and explore." In exploring underwater places, there are many, many dangerous spaces. And my last rule is simple and clear. Stay out of caves when exploring down here. We look, and what? Boy, all kinds of sea creatures down there. Some really fancy fish with long fins and big eyes. And there's a couple of longer fish with long pointy noses swimming around. And there's a crab down in the bottom with those pinchers and a couple of more starfish. And there's a cave. And Papa Bear says, this cave is big and wide. It might be safe to go inside. So Papa Bear heads inside the cave. Little Boy Bear is outside the cave. And just like always, he sees something that Papa Bear doesn't, because it's not a cave. It's a giant fish with its mouth wide open that Papa Bear thinks is a cave. Boy Bear says, "But Papa, do you think you should? Something tells me it wouldn't be good." And just before the big fish clamps his mouth down on Papa Bear, Papa Bear's able to kick away and get out of there. And he grabs Boy Bear by the hand, and they swim back up to the top of the water to the boat, saying, "As I was saying, stay out of small spaces and any other dangerous places." Wow, we learned that rule very fast. And just like that. That big fish followed them up to the top. You know, I think that's more like a whale almost, it looks like, because he flipped his big tail up and he hit that boat and he knocked them right out of the boat. Little boy bear is able to take that piece of wood that broke off that was holding the sail, and he reaches out because Papa Bear's in the water, and he hooks that long stick right in Papa Bear's shirt and pulls him back to the boat and says, "Tell me, Dad, was that the last?" And Papa Bear says, "Yes, that rule was the very last one. My safe vacation rules are done." And the boat is upside down, and there's holes in the boat, but they're above water, so there's no water getting in, and the sail looks pretty torn and ragged. But Boy Bear, just to make sure Papa Bear doesn't get into any more trouble, he takes that rope and he ties Papa Bear to the pole holding the sail. As they go back to shore, and there's Mama Bear standing and waiting at the top of the steps in their vacation cottage. Boy Bear yells out, "Ma, you won't have to worry anymore. Pa taught me how to be safe at the shore." And that's the end. So they got back safely and had a whole bunch of adventures, didn't they? That Papa Bear, he's quite a character, isn't he? He always seems to be getting saved by the little Boy Bear. What are they going to do tomorrow night? It says Bears in the Night. I wonder what that one's about. We're going to find out tomorrow night when we come back with another Berenstain Bears story. Bears in the Night is the name of that one. So that's the end of that book for tonight. And we'll come back with another one in a little bit. And that next one will be the end of Bridge to Terabithia. Two more chapters to go in Bridge to Terabithia, and we'll have those for you when we come back. And those of you that are ready to head off to bed, you have a great night's sleep, and sleep well, and have a great day tomorrow. Welcome back to Reading with Rick, and it is time to put Bridge to Terabithia to bed. We're going to finish this story off tonight with chapters 12 and 13. And if you were with us last night, what a sad ending that was when Jess found out that his good friend Leslie was accidentally killed in an accident. And so we're going to find out how he deals with that now in the final two chapters of Bridge to Terabithia. So this is chapter 12, and it's called Stranded. They walked slowly across the field and down the hill to the old Perkins place. There were four or five cars parked outside. His father raised the knocker. Jess could hear P.T. barking from the back of the house and rushing to the door. "Hush, P.T. a voice which Jess did not know said. Down. The door was opened by a man who was half leaning over to hold the dog back. At the sight of Jess, P.T. snatched himself loose and leapt joyfully upon the boy. Jess picked him up and rubbed the back of the boy a dog's neck, as he used to when P.T. was a tiny puppy. I see he knows you, the strange man said with a funny half-smile on his face. Come in, won't you? He stood back for the three of them to enter. They went into the golden room, and it was just the same, except more beautiful, because the sun was pouring through the south windows. Four or five people Jess had never seen before were sitting about, whispering some, but mostly not talking at all. There was no place to sit down, but the strange man was bringing chairs from the dining room. The three of them sat down stiffly and waited, not knowing what to wait for. An older woman got up slowly from the couch and came over to Jess's mother. Her eyes were red under her perfectly white hair. I'm Leslie's grandmother, she said, putting out her hand. His mother took it awkwardly. Miss Ahrens, she said in a low voice, from up the hill. Leslie's grandmother shook his mother's and then his father's hands. Thank you for coming, she said. Then she turned to Jess. And you must be Jess, she said, and Jess nodded. Leslie, and her eyes filled up with tears, Leslie told me about you. For a minute, Jess thought she was trying to say something else. He didn't want to look at her, so he gave himself over to rubbing P.T., who was hanging across his lap. I'm sorry, her voice broke. I can't bear it. The man who had opened the door came up and put his arms around her. As he was leading her out of the room, Jess could hear her crying. He was glad she was gone. There was something weird about a woman like that crying. It was as if the lady who talked about Polydent on TV had suddenly burst into tears. It didn't fit. He looked around at the room full of red-eyed adults. Look at me, he wanted to say to them. I'm not crying. A part of him stepped back and examined this thought. He was the only person his age he knew whose best friend had died. It made him important. The kids at school Monday would probably whisper around him and treat him with respect, the way they'd all treated Billy Joe Weems last year after his father had been killed in a car crash. He wouldn't have to talk to anybody if he didn't want to, and all the teachers would be especially nice to him. Mama would even make the girls be nice to him. He had a sudden desire to see Leslie laid out. He wondered if she were back in the library or in Millsburg at one of the funeral parlors. Would they bury her in blue jeans, or maybe that blue jumper and the flowery blouse she'd worn on Easter? That would be nice. People might snicker at the blue jeans, and he didn't want anyone to snicker at Leslie when she was dead. Bill came into the room. P.T. slid off Jess's lap and went to him. The man leaned down and rubbed the dog's back, and Jess stood up. Jess, Bill came over to him and put his arms around him as though he had been Leslie instead of himself. Bill held him close so that a button on his sweater was pressing painfully into Jess's forehead. But as uncomfortable as he was, Jess didn't move. He could feel Bill's body shaking, and he was afraid that if he looked up, he would see Bill crying too. He didn't want to see Bill crying. He wanted to get out of this house. It was smothering him. Why wasn't Leslie here to help him out of this? Why didn't she come running in and make everyone laugh again? You think it's so great to die and make everyone cry and carry on? Well, it ain't. She loved you, you know, he could tell from Bill's voice that he was crying. She told me once that if it weren't for you, and his voice broke completely. Thank you, he said a moment later. Thank you for being such a wonderful friend to her. Bill didn't sound like himself. He sounded like someone in an old mushy movie, the kind of person Leslie and Jess would laugh at and imitate later. Boo-hoo, you were such a wonderful friend to her. He couldn't help moving back just enough to get his forehead off the stupid button. To his relief, Bill let go. He heard his father ask Bill quietly over his head about the service. And Bill, answering quietly, almost in his regular voice, that they had decided to have the body cremated and were going to take the ashes to his family home in Pennsylvania tomorrow. Cremated? Something clicked inside Jess's head. That meant Leslie was gone, turned to ashes. He would never see her again, not even dead, never. How could they dare? Leslie belonged to him. More to him than anyone in the world. No one had even asked him. No one had even told him. And now he was never going to see her again, and all they could do was cry. Not for Leslie. They weren't crying for Leslie. They were crying for themselves. Just themselves. If they'd cared at all for Leslie, they would have never brought her to this rotten place. He had to hold tightly to his hands for fear he might sock Bill in the face. He, Jess, was the only one who really cared for Leslie, but Leslie had failed him. She went and died just when he needed her the most. She went and left him. She went swinging on that rope just to show him that she was no coward. So there, Jess Ahrens. She was probably somewhere right now laughing at him, making fun of him like he was Mrs. Myers. She had tricked him. She had made him leave his old self behind and come into her world. And then before he was really at home in it, but was too late to go back, she had left him stranded there, like an astronaut wandering about on the moon, alone. He was never sure later just when he left the old Perkins place, but he remembered running up the hill toward his own house with angry tears streaming down his face. He banged through the door. Maybelle was standing there, her brown eyes wide. "Did you see her?" she asked excitedly. "Did you see her laid out?" He hit her in the face, as hard as he had ever hit anything in his life. She stumbled backward from him with a little yelp. He went into the bedroom and felt under the mattress until he retrieved all his paper and the paints that Leslie had given him at Christmas time. Ellie was standing in the bedroom door, fussing at him. He pushed past her. From the couch, Brenda, too, was complaining, but the only sound that really entered his head was that of Maybelle whimpering. He ran out the kitchen door and down the field all the way to the stream without looking back. The stream was a little lower than it had been when he had seen it last. Above from the crabapple tree, the frayed end of the rope swung gently. "I'm now the fastest runner in the fifth grade," he screamed something without words and flung the papers and paints into the dirty brown water. The paints floated on top, riding the current like a boat, but the paper swirled about, soaking in the muddy water, being sucked down around and down. He watched them all disappear. Gradually, his breath quieted and his heart slowed from its wild pace. The ground was still muddy from the rains, but he sat down anyway. There was nowhere to go, nowhere, ever again, and he put his head down on his knee. That was a damn fool thing to do, and his father sat down on the dirt beside him. "I don't care, I don't care," and he was crying now, crying so hard he could hardly breathe. His father pulled Jess over on his lap as though he were Joyce Ann. "There, there," he said, patting his head. "Shh, shh." "I hate her," Jess said through his sobs. "I hate her. I wish I'd never seen her in my whole life." And his father stroked his hair without speaking. Jess grew quiet. They both watched the water. Finally, his father said, "Hell, ain't it?" It was the kind of thing Jess could hear his father saying to another man. He found it strangely comforting, and it made him bold. "Do you believe people go to hell? Really to hell, I mean? You ain't worrying about Leslie Burke." It didn't seem peculiar, but still. "Well, Maybelle said..." "Maybelle? Maybelle ain't God." "Yeah, but how do you know what God does?" "Lord, boy, don't be a fool. God ain't gonna send any little girls to hell." He'd never in his life thought of Leslie Burke as a little girl, but still, God was sure to. She wouldn't have been 11 until November. They got up and began to walk up the hill. "I didn't mean that about hating her," he said. "I don't know what made me say that." His father nodded to show he understood. Everyone, even Brenda, was gentle to him. Everyone except Maybelle, who hung back as though afraid to have anything to do with him. He wanted to tell her he was sorry, but he couldn't. He was too tired. He couldn't just say the words. He had to make it up to her, and he was too tired to figure out how. That afternoon, Bill came up to the house. They were about to leave for Pennsylvania, and he wondered if Jess would take care of the dog until they got back. Sure. He was glad Bill wanted him to help. He was afraid he had hurt Bill by running away this morning. He wanted to know that Bill didn't blame him for anything, but it was not the kind of question he could put into words. He held P.T. and waved as the dusty little Italian car turned into the main road. He thought he saw them wave back, but it was too far away to be sure. His mother had never allowed him to have a dog, but she made no objection to P.T. being in the house. P.T. jumped up on his bed and he slept all night with P.T.'s body curled against his chest. Chapter 13 is called Building the Bridge. He woke up Saturday morning with a dull headache. It was still early, but he got up. He wanted to do the milking. His father had done it ever since Thursday night, but he wanted to go back to it, to somehow make things normal again. He shut PT in the shed, and the dog's whimpering reminded him of Maybell and made his headache worse. But he couldn't have PT yapping at Miss Bessie while he tried to milk. No one was awake when he brought the milk in to put it away, so he poured a warm glass for himself and got a couple of pieces of light bread. He wanted his paints back, and he decided to go down and see if he could find them. He let PT out of the shed and gave the dog a half piece of bread. It was a beautiful spring morning. Early wildflowers were dotting the deep green of the fields, and the sky was clean and blue. The creek had fallen well below the bank and seemed less terrifying than before. A large branch was washed up into the bank, and he hauled it up to the narrowest place and laid it bank to bank. He stepped on it, and it seemed firm, so he crossed on it, foot over foot, to the other side, grabbing the smaller branches which grew out from the main one toward the opposite bank to keep his balance. There was no sign of his paints. He landed slightly upstream from Terabithia. If it was still Terabithia, if it could be entered across a branch instead of swung into, P.T. was left crying piteously on the other side. Then the dog took courage and paddled across the stream. The current carried him past Jess, but he made it safely to the bank and ran back, shaking great drops of cold water on Jess. They went into the castle stronghold. It was dark and damp, but there was no evidence there to suggest that the queen had died. He felt the need to do something fitting, but Leslie was not here to tell him what it was. The anger which had possessed him yesterday flared up again. "Leslie, I'm just a dumb dodo, and you know it. What am I supposed to do?" The coldness inside of him had moved upward into his throat, constricting it. He swallowed several times. It occurred to him that he probably had cancer of the throat. Wasn't that one of the seven deadly signs? Difficulty in swallowing? He began to sweat. He didn't want to die, Lord. He was just 10 years old. He had hardly begun to live. "Leslie, were you scared? Did you know you were dying? Were you scared like me?" A picture of Leslie being sucked into the cold water flashed across his brain. "Come on, Prince Tarion," he said quite loudly. "We must make a funeral wreath for the queen." He sat in the clear space between the bank and the first line of trees and bent a pine bough into a circle, tying it with a piece of wet string from the castle. And because it looked cold and green, he picked up spring beauties from the forest floor and wove them through the needles. He put it down in front of him. A cardinal flew down to the bank, cocked its brilliant head, and seemed to stare at the wreath. P.T. let out a growl, which sounded more like a purr. Jess put his hand on the dog to quiet him. The bird hopped about a minute more, then flew leisurely away. "It's a sign from the spirits," Jess said quietly. "We made a worthy offering." He walked slowly, as part of a great procession, though only the puppy could be seen, slowly forward, carrying the queen's wreath to the sacred grove. He forced himself deep into the dark center of the grove and, kneeling, laid the wreath upon the thick carpet of golden needles. "Father, into thy hands I commend her spirit." He knew Leslie would have liked these words. They had the ring of the sacred grove in them. The solemn procession wound its way through the sacred grove homeward to the castle. Like a single bird across a storm cloud sky, a tiny piece winged its way through the chaos inside his body. "Help! Jesse, help me!" A scream shattered the quietness. Jess raced to the sound of Maybell's cry. She had gotten halfway across on the tree bridge and now stood there grabbing the upper branches, terrified to move either forward or backward. "Okay, Maybell," the words came out more steadily than he felt. "Just hold still, I'll get you." He was not sure the branch would hold the weight of them both. He looked down at the water. It was low enough for him to walk across, but still swift. Suppose it swept him off his feet. He decided for the branch. He inched out on it until he was close enough to touch her. He'd have to get her back to the home side of the creek. "Okay," he said, "now back up." "I can't. I'm right here, Maybell. You think I'm going to let you fall? Here." He put out his right hand. "Hold on to me and slide sideways on the thing." She let go with her left hand for a moment and then grabbed the branch again. "I'm scared, Jesse. I'm too scared." "Of course you're scared. Anybody'd be scared. You just got to trust me, okay? I'm not going to let you fall, Maybell. I promise you." She nodded, her eyes still wide with fear, but she let go of the branch and took his hand, straightening a little and swaying. He gripped her tightly. "Okay, now, it ain't far. Just slide your right foot a little way, then bring your left foot up close." "I forgot which is right." "The front one," he said patiently, "the one closer to home." She nodded again and obediently moved her right foot a few inches. "Now just let go of the branch with your other hand and hold on to me tight." She let go of the branch and squeezed his hand. "Good, you're doing great. Now slide a little ways more." She swayed but did not scream, just dug her little fingernails into the palm of his hand. "Great, fine, you're all right." The same quiet, assuring voice of the paramedics on emergency. But his heart was bongoing against his chest. "Okay, okay, a little bit more now." And when her right foot came at last to the part of the branch which rested on the bank, she fell forward, pulling him down. "Watch it, Maybelle." He was off balance, but he fell, not into the stream, but with his chest across Maybelle's legs, his own legs waving in the empty air above the water. "Woo!" he was laughing with relief. "What you trying to do, girl? Kill me?" She shook her head a solemn no. "I know I swore on the Bible not to follow you, but I woke up this morning and you was gone. I had to do some things." She was scraping at the mud on her bare legs. "I just wanted to find you so you wouldn't be so lonesome." She hung her head. "But I got too scared." He pulled himself around until he was sitting beside her. They watched P.T. swimming across, the current carrying him too swiftly, but he was not seeming to mind. He climbed out well below the crabapple and came running back to where they sat. "Everybody gets scared sometimes, Maybelle. You don't have to be ashamed." And he saw a flash of Leslie's eyes as she was going into the girls' room to see Janice. "Everybody gets scared." "P.T. ain't scared. He even saw Leslie." "It ain't the same for dogs. It's like the smarter you are, the more things can scare you." She looked at him in disbelief. "But you weren't scared." "Lord Maybelle, I was shaking like jello." "You're just saying that." And he laughed. He couldn't help being glad she didn't believe him. He jumped up and pulled her to her feet. "Let's go eat." He let her beat him to the house. When he walked into the basement classroom, he saw Mrs. Myers had already had Leslie's desk taken out of the front of the room. Of course, by Monday, Jess knew, but still, at the bus stop, he looked up, half expecting to see her running up across the field, her lovely, even, rhythmic run. Maybe she was already at school. Bill had dropped her off, as he did some days when she was late for the bus, but then, when Jess came into the room, her desk was no longer there. Why were they all in such a rush to be rid of her? He put his head down on his own desk, his whole body heavy and cold. He could hear the sounds of the whispers, but not the words. Not that he wanted to hear the words. He was suddenly ashamed that he thought he might be regarded with respect by the other kids, trying to profit for himself from Leslie's death. "I wanted to be the best, the fastest runner in the school, and now I am." Lord, he made himself sick. He didn't care what the others said or what they thought, just as long as they left him alone, just so long as he didn't have to talk to them or meet their stares. They had all hated Leslie, except maybe Janice. Even after they'd given up trying to make Leslie miserable, they'd kept on despising her, as though there was one of them worth the nail on Leslie's little toe. Yeah, but even he himself had entertained the traitorous thought that now he would be the fastest. Mrs. Myers barked the command to stand for the allegiance. He didn't move. Whether he couldn't or wouldn't, he didn't really care. What could she do to him, after all? "Jesse Ahrens, will you step out into the hall, please?" He raised his leaden body and stumbled out of the room. He thought he heard Gary Fulcher giggle, but he couldn't be sure. He leaned against the wall and waited for Monster Mouth Myers to finish singing "Oh Say Can You See" and join him. He could hear her giving the class some sort of assignment in arithmetic before she came out and quietly closed the door behind her. "Okay, shoot, I don't care." She came over so close to him that he could smell her dime store powder. "Jesse," her voice was softer than he had ever heard it, but he didn't answer. Let her yell. He was used to that. "Jesse," she repeated, "I just want to give you my sincere sympathy." The words were like a Hallmark card, but the tone was new to him. He looked up into her face, despite himself. Behind her turned-up glasses, Mrs. Myers' narrow eyes were full of tears. For a minute, he thought he might cry himself. he and Mrs. Myers standing in the basement hallways crying over Leslie Burke. It was so weird he almost laughed instead. When my husband died, and Jess could hardly imagine Mrs. Myers ever having had a husband, people kept telling me not to cry, kept trying to make me forget. Mrs. Myers loving, mourning, how could you picture it? But I didn't want to forget, and she took her handkerchief from her sleeve and blew her nose. "Excuse me," she said. "This morning when I came in, someone had already taken out her desk." She stopped and blew her nose again. I never had such a student in all my years of teaching. I shall always be grateful." He wanted to comfort her. He wanted to unsay all the things he had said about her, even unsay the things Leslie had said. Lord, don't let her ever find out. So I realize, if it's hard for me, how much harder it must be for you. Let's try to help each other, shall we? "Yes, ma'am." He couldn't think of anything else to say. Maybe someday, when he was grown, he would write her a letter and tell her that Leslie Burke had thought she was a great teacher or something. Leslie wouldn't mind. Sometimes, like the Barbie doll, you need to give people something that's for them, not just something that makes you feel good at giving it. Because Mrs. Myers had helped him already by understanding that he would never forget Leslie. He thought about it all day, how before Leslie came, he had been a nothing. A stupid, weird little kid who drew funny pictures and chased around a cow field trying to act big, trying to hide a whole mob of foolish little fears running riot inside his gut. It was Leslie who had taken him from the cow pasture into Terabithia and turned him into a king. He had thought that was it. Wasn't king the best you could be? Now it occurred to him that perhaps Terabithia was like a castle where you came to be knighted. After you stayed for a while and grew strong, you had to move on. For hadn't Leslie, even in Terabithia, tried to push back the walls of his mind and make him see beyond to the shining world, huge and terrible and beautiful and very fragile? "Handle with care everything, even the predator," she had said. Now it was time for him to move out. She wasn't there, so he must go for both of them. It was up to him to pay back to the world in beauty and caring what Leslie had loaned him in vision and strength. As for the terrors ahead, for he did not fool himself that they were all behind him, well, you just have to stand up to your fear and not let it squeeze you white. Right, Leslie? Right. Bill and Judy came back from Pennsylvania on Wednesday with a U-Haul truck. No one ever stayed long in the old Perkins place. "We came to the country for her sake. Now that she's gone," and they gave Jessie all of Leslie's books and her paint set with 3 pads of real watercolor paper. "She would want you to have them," Bill said. Jess and his dad helped them load the U-Haul, and noontime his mother brought down ham sandwiches and coffee. A little scared, the Burks wouldn't want to eat her food, but needing, Jess knew, to do something. At last the truck was filled, and the Aaronses and the Burks stood awkwardly, no one knowing how to say goodbye. "Well," Bill said, "if there is anything we've left that you want, please help yourself." "Could I have some of the lumber on the back porch?" Jess asked. "Yes, of course. Anything you see." Bill hesitated, then continued. "I meant to give you PT, he said, but, and he looked at Jess, and his eyes were those of a pleading little boy, "but I can't seem to give him up." "It's okay. Leslie would want you to keep him." The next day, after school, Jess went down and got the lumber he needed, carrying it a couple of boards at a time to the creek bank. He put the 2 longest pieces across at the narrow place upstream from the crabapple tree, and when he was sure they were as firm and even as he could make them, he began to nail on the cross pieces. "What you doing, Jess?" Maybell had followed him down again, as he had guessed she might. "It's a secret, Maybell. Tell me, when I finish, okay? I swear on the Bible I won't tell nobody, not Billy Jean, not Joyce Ann, not Mama." She was jerking her head back and forth in solemn emphasis. "Oh, I don't know about Joyce Ann. You might want to tell Joyce Ann sometime." "Tell Joyce Ann something that's a secret between you and me?" The idea seemed to horrify her. "Yeah, I was just thinking about it." Her face sagged. "Joyce Ann ain't nothing but a baby." "Well, she wouldn't likely be a queen first off. You'd have to train her and stuff." "Queen? Who gets to be queen?" "I'll explain it when I finish, okay?" And when he finished, he put flowers in her hair and led her across the bridge. The great bridge into Terabithia. which might look to someone with no magic in him like a few planks across a nearly dry gully. "Shh," he said, "look." "Where? Can't you see him?" he whispered. "All the Terabithians standing on tiptoe to see you." "Me?" "Shh, yes. There's a rumor going around that the beautiful girl arriving today might be the queen they've been waiting for." That's the end of Bridge to Terabithia. What a great story by Catherine Patterson. Happy at times and very sad at times. And in the end, well, Jess and his little sister Maybelle went back to Terabithia, and it looks like Maybelle is going to be the new queen of Terabithia. So that's a great book. You could really imagine a lot of things in that book, couldn't you? You could imagine Jess practicing his running. You could imagine all the kids in school and how kids sometimes pick on each other. And you can imagine how the teachers talk to the kids. And you can imagine how friends hang out together and talk to each other when there's no adults around. And you can imagine good things happening and imagine bad things happening. And imagine crying and being happy and laughing and imagining a trip you might take. All good things you can do when you read a book. And that book is Bridge to Terabithia. So that's it. That's the end of that book. So we got to find a new book to begin now. Who knows? I'm going to leave it for a surprise. We'll see. I might not even know. I might have to do some digging and see what I come up with for tomorrow night. But I guarantee you, I promise, we will have a new story tomorrow night. We just don't know which one it'll be. So, you have a good night. That's going to end tonight's episode of Reading with Rick. We finished off one Berenstain Bear story about going to a vacation spot on the beach. And we finished off Bridge to Terabithia. Thanks, everybody, for listening so close. And I hope you like that story. And I hope you come back again tomorrow for another couple of stories. I sure enjoy our time together. Good night. I'll talk to you tomorrow.